Hey everybody, it's Dan P. over at Infinite Lives. Got a special episode for you. Interviewing Mega Ran. He's a nerdcore hip-hop artist. We talked about gaming, hip-hop, all that stuff, PAX. You should check out his website at megaran.com. Buy an album or two. It's all good, man. I've been listening to it for the last 2 weeks, and I apologize for kind of marking out while I'm interviewing him, because really appreciated that he took time out of his busy schedule. It's a busy week for him. So, yeah, sit back, relax, and enjoy. Hey, everybody, this is Dan P. with Infinite Lives Podcast. I got a special guest on a very special episode. I got Mega Ran, a.k.a. Random. How's it going, man?
Very good. How are you, man?
I'm pretty good, pretty good. I'm really excited that you're taking time out of your busy schedule. I know this is a pretty busy week for you.
Oh, definitely. With PAX going on and me having to basically break from a tour to do PAX, so I'm getting ready to head out to L.A. for the second half of our tour and then, you know, do a couple of days on shows and then have to go to PAX. So yeah, a lot of preparation.
Yeah, it's good to be busy, though.
yeah, it's better than not having anything to do. Yeah. I thank God for busyness, that's for sure.
So is this your first PAX that you're going to?
No, I've been to the last three PAX.
Oh, okay.
PAX East and PAX Prime. Usually I go as a panelist, and I go and usually play a couple of after parties and things like that, but this is the first time I'm actually playing as a musical guest.
Oh, man, that's like a sin on my part that I haven't come across your stuff yet. Up until maybe like 2 weeks ago, I was looking at the after party for PAX because I actually had some time off of work and I saw your name crop up and I was like, who is this guy? And I saw that you're playing in the concerts and everything, and I've been listening to your music like for like the last 2 weeks like crazy.
Wow, that's awesome, man. Thank you.
Yeah, Like, I gotta say, I mean, you know, I don't want to kiss up too much or nothing, but, but, like, you know, I listen to a lot of, like, hip-hop, you know, nerdcore, gaming influence kind of stuff, and I've listened to, like, Kadish Flow on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like that guy. MC Frontalot, Dougalby, MC Chris, but I gotta say, I like your stuff the best.
Well, thank you so much, man. it's just a cool thing to even, you know, have that many options when it comes to nerdy hip hop. Like, I think it's a really great thing. It's a testament to how far we've come, you know, as a generation. I feel like this, the nerdy hip hop thing, to not just have many people doing it, but a lot of people doing it well, you know, is a really great thing. So I'm a huge, like, MC Frontalot, you know, Kadesh Flow. There's a lot more. There's Richie Branson. There's Mr. Wilson, Adam Warrock, Dualcore. Yeah, there's just so many now. So it's a really great thing. It's a great time for nerdy music.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I like that it's kind of gone from, you know, just dropping a bunch of game references or nerdy references into actual, like, it feels like, you know, I mean, I don't want to say mainstream hip hop, but it sounds like it's not just that. It's not just, you know, I'm just making a bunch of songs about geeks or something.
Right. It's now, I guess it's, the lines being blurred, I guess, more than ever. And I understand what you're saying, because a lot of nerdy music can hold up, you know, standing up against, you know, mainstream hip hop music, which is a great thing. It's a testament to the times, you know, the technology, that now we're able to make things that sound just as good as, you know, the industry, you know, in our bedrooms, you know. So it's getting harder and harder to tell the difference now, which I think is great. And that was my biggest issue with the beginnings of nerdcore that I had heard, was that a lot of it, quality wise, wasn't up to snuff. You know, and it's like you could play it next to, you know, a traditional rap song and it just couldn't stand up. But nowadays, a lot of it can, you know, not just sound quality wise, but just, you know, lyrically and concept and execution wise, it can actually stand up. So it's a great time.
Yeah. That's kind of how me and my friends got started with this podcast. We're just like, you know, the technology's there. We should just go and do it. We don't have to wait for other people to come and tell us that that we can do something.
Absolutely.
So everybody that I talk to on this podcast is I always try to ask the same question. What's your origin story? What's your gamer origin story? What's your first gaming memory that you can remember?
Wow, my earliest gaming memory. Wow, I'm trying to remember which one was first, but I remember plunking a bunch of quarters into Galaga
when I was young,
at my local laundromat. But around that same time, I got an Atari 2600 and had Pac-Man and Yara's Revenge. And my favorite was a game called Mega Mania. And so I used to play a lot of these games, Pitfall and all that. And that was to me, I think that was my first experience with video games. It was a 2600 and Galaga in arcade.
Yeah, my first was actually like on a old IBM playing a game called Bruce Lee. It's a pretty bad game, even by then. Yeah, back in like 1983 or something. So, when did you get your first Nintendo?
I think I waited. It was maybe about a year later after the NES was out, because I wound up getting the Action Set, which was the one with Mario and Duck Hunt, mm-hmm. and the Red Zapper.
One cartridge?
Yeah, on the one cartridge. So I was a little late to the party. Even to this day, I'm always late with things. I start to appreciate stuff when no one else is playing it anymore. So I was still playing Atari 2600, and the very last generation of Atari 2600 games were great. I can still remember they did like Pole Position 2 and like Real Sports Boxing, mm-hmm. and they started making some really cool games where they were taking advantage of whatever technology they had.
Yeah.
And so the games got pretty good to me. So I was happy, but all my friends had the NES and they had the Gyromite and all that.
Yeah.
But I wasn't into it at that time. I was like, Gyromite, this looks pretty dumb. Like, I'm not really.
I don't know. Have you tried Gyromite? Recently?
Recently? No way.
Or at any time whatsoever?
Well, when I was young and I just couldn't get into it, I wasn't good at it. I got squashed a lot.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good game. Like even back then, I think it was just the novelty of the robot.
Yeah.
I feel you with getting late. Getting in there late. I actually got a Famicom when Super Mario 3 came out. So yeah, I was kind of like that kid on the sideline, just kind of going to other people's houses and playing games on over mm-hmm. there.
Okay.
Yeah. So did you start your Mega Man fandom at the first one, or were you introduced to it slowly, or?
No, it was Mega Man 2. It was Nintendo Power that did it. And I mean, I'm sure I was just like every other kid when Mega Man 2 came about. I mean, it was just so vibrant. I mean, it was just so colorful. There's like all these cool bosses. I mean, it was just so much character to it. So I had a Nintendo Power subscription, and I remember getting the issue with Mega Man 2 on the front,
mm-hmm.
and I instantly was hooked. I mean, I started drawing my own Mega Man bosses, and I never played the game, but I asked my mom for it, but she wouldn't get it for me. It was too expensive or something. And so I wound up checking the bargain bin, you know, me as usual being late. I've got most of my games out of the bargain bin, so I got Mega Man 1. And she's like, well, you know, you're going to have to play this because I'm not spending $40 on a new game. So I got Mega Man 1, and it was just so hard.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, you know, it made me want to just play it and play it and play it. So I did eventually beat it, and that just got me ready for Mega Man 2. I think I rented Mega Man 2 first, and then I was like, I gotta have this.
Yeah, that's a whole part of the gaming experience that they don't have today. The whole rental thing that was a big deal for me, like on Fridays, because we didn't have that much money. So, you know, you save up your money so you could rent some games and stuff.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, I was big on rentals on the Fridays too. I was the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I think I played so many games because we were renting a game every week. There was West Coast Video was the place that we would go to.
Yep.
And they would do like $2 rentals and just get like three games sometimes. Mm-hmm. And just have fun all weekend and have to take them back. But every once in a while we get to a game that we didn't want to take back. It was usually like a role-playing game or something. Yeah. And, you know, you wound up keeping it a little later just to get into it.
Oh, the best with the role-playing games is that you're hoping that you get the same cartridge that you checked out before, so you got the save game.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, man, that happened to me a few times. I'm like, yes, I got the same game.
Yeah, I ran into a couple times where my mom would go to the video store without me, like on the way back, you know, from her work, and she would rent a game just thinking that I would like it, and it was a pretty, you know, pretty bad game. I can't remember, like Uncle Fester's Quest or something like that, and just like not liking it, but I got to play it anyway because my mom spent her money on it.
Absolutely. That was my mom too. Like, she would go into the bargain bin and just grab me a game, and so I was stuck with it. Funny, I wound up with a lot of Capcom games that way. I had Trojan, I had Commando.
Oh yeah.
I had, what was the other one? There were a lot of Section Z. There were a lot of Capcom games that were just kind of the obscure ones that would wind up in the bargain bin. And so yeah, my mom would just every couple of weeks, you know, she would just happen to grab one, like, I got you a game, and I'm like, is it Mario? And then I look at it. I used to get. Was another company's games, SNK's games were off.
Of course, yeah.
They had a game called Athena, and I played that until the paint came off of it. I mean, it wasn't very good, but it was all I had, so I would just play it all the time. That and another shooter called Alpha Mission, and I don't know why I can remember these so clearly. There was a tank game, Iron Tank. So I would just play these games all the time. So I was like the master of the bad game. Because whatever was $20, I was on it.
Oh yeah, I was listening to a bunch of your stuff last night in preparation, and I think you're probably the only person that I know that would have a song based on Street Fighter 2010.
Yeah,
I played it's that like, recently. That's not that's pretty hard. I had that game.
It's not a good game, and it's very hard. It's one that I'm sure Capcom would love to forget. Like, it's. I mean, the story itself. I mean, Ken from Street Fighter decides to become a scientist. I mean, the story itself is just like
with the cyberplasm.
Sounds legit. Okay. Yeah. Like. So, yeah, it was one of those games where, and I played it a lot because, again, I think that was another bargain bin game where I played it a whole lot, but it was so hard. Mm-hmm. And I remember just feeling so accomplished just to beat, like, one level in that game.
Yeah, it's tough, man. So how was your mom with your game playing? Were you pretty free to do whatever? I mean, for me, as long as I kept my grades up, I could play, you know, pretty much whenever I wanted, you know, as long as it wasn't too late.
That was me. As long as homework was done, you know, and the house was clean or my dishes were clean, I could play. I was a latchkey kid, so throughout most of my gaming life, I was the one who I'd come home by myself, let myself in and have to kind of discipline myself on getting work done and then playing games and then going outside and being in on time. Because my mom worked really late, but she would have the neighbors watching me too. So, so they made sure I didn't mess up. And so, yeah, I couldn't play until work was done. Sometimes she would take the cords away, and I mentioned that in one of my songs, that to make sure that I couldn't play, sometimes she would just take the AC adapter.
Yeah.
And luckily for me, I had a Casio keyboard that I used to play. And then I realized that it was the same adapter. And so... So I plugged it in, and I would still get to play my game. And she would never know. It was great.
So I heard it. I see it mentioned in a couple of your songs that you also had like a Genesis. Was that your next system after the NES?
I don't really remember when I got the Genesis. I think, but yeah, it was definitely right after the NES. And again, I played the NES until the end of its, you know, lifespan, you know.
Of course.
Playing those late games. And I still remember later in the system, like, you know, people were stepping up the graphics and things. And there were games like Shadow of the Ninja and OG Man and like games that were coming out that had really awesome graphics and they were a lot of fun. So I wasn't in a real rush to move forward. But I think one Christmas, my mom got me the Genesis. The way I got my Super Nintendo, I don't even think I actually went and bought one. I think I traded a bunch of things for it. I was in South Carolina for the summer, and I traded like my Nintendo and all of my games or something like that. Wow. For this kid's Super Nintendo.
Damn.
And I had a bunch of games. I had about 35 games, but I traded them all for a Super Nintendo, and he only had one game. He had Mystical Ninja. And that was a great game.
Yeah,
one of those, you know, just kind of an unsung game, but it was a lot of fun, and that was the only thing I played because that was all I had, and I couldn't afford any of these games.
Damn. So what are you playing nowadays? Like, are you on Xbox?
I have an Xbox and PS3. I was lucky. Of course, I was late to the new generation as well. But I got a GameStop coupon one day for like $100 off a PS3, and I thought this was some kind of mistake. But it was right around the time of the big PSN hacking fiasco of years ago, and so I guess people weren't buying PS3s around that time. So they sent $100 coupons out for people to buy them. I'm like, all right, I'm going to buy it now. So I did, and I didn't know what to play. So I went back and played all the first generation games that were good. You know, the God of War 3 and Uncharted and all that. But nowadays, I'm still catching up. I mean, there's just so many great games.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
So it's like, I had an Xbox, but I wasn't a big fan in the beginning. But later on, it started to pick up for me. But right now, I'm playing, what am I playing now? The Last of Us.
I still got to play that.
It's a great game. I usually pick like one big title and play it for like half the year because I'm always touring and stuff, so I can't necessarily get to
down
and eat it. But this year I actually did three. I beat Tomb Raider, which I really liked a lot.
Yep.
And BioShock Infinite, which I think was probably game of the year. But, you know, we still have Batman and some other things coming, so I don't know. But those are my favorites. And Ni No Kuni, which I didn't get to beat, but I did play a lot, and I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Skyrim, I'm still playing when I can.
Yeah, that game never ends anyway.
Yeah, games like that aren't made for people like me. I can't stay still long enough, so I don't get anything done. I just walk around for a day. but it's fun. There's just so many things you can do with it. So that's really what I'm playing now is Last of Us. I try to play sports when I can, so I'm playing Madden or NBA. But yeah, it's just mostly Last of Us, and like I'll pick up an occasional PlayStation Network game. I just beat DuckTales. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was looking forward to that one for so long. So and now they're doing Strider too, so I'm really excited about that.
Hey, Capcom's coming back up.
I see. I mean, by going to the past, maybe we'll get a Street Fighter 2010 remake.
You know what? I'll try it. I'd try a remake.
I would. Hopefully it wouldn't, you know, it'd make it a little less brutal.
So, you started off making beats on a PlayStation with your
I did. That was how my musical career started. It's so ironic that at that time I didn't think about it. You know, it's one of those things that's right under your nose. Like I was using video games to make music, but I still wasn't. And I was even sampling video games. I was sampling like Final Fantasy soundtracks and Resident Evil soundtracks and things because I worked at a game store. And when the MTV Music Generator CD came in, it was such a rare thing to find, so I snatched it up, and I'm like, I gotta buy this. And so I took it home, and I started working on beats, and I instantly was about to throw it away. I was like, this thing sucks. Like, you can't make anything but techno stuff on it. So eventually, I got into trying to copy some of my favorite hip-hop tracks. And when I did that, that was how I learned how to make beats. And I remember clearly I tried to copy a Mobb Deep song, Quiet Storm. Yeah. And when I attempted to remake that beat, and once I got it, I was like, oh, I can make beats on this now. So that led me, that gave me kind of the, you know, the inspiration that I could actually go and make original tracks. So yeah, I started making original tracks for whatever my memory card could hold. And then I would burn them onto CDs and play them for people, like real rappers. And they'd be like, hey man, what are you making beats on? I'm like, ah, just some software. You know? And sometimes people would buy beats from me or use my beats on productions.
And off of the PlayStation.
But they never knew they were buying PlayStation beats, you know?
Hey, you know that PlayStation, I think one of the models is actually sought after by like audiophiles, I think.
Really?
Yeah, something to do with like the sound chip or the compression or something is like extremely valuable or something for audiophiles. Like it's supposed to be super clear, but yeah. Yeah, I read that like on a wiki one time about the PlayStation.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's apparently one of the early models is like highly sought after as just a music player.
Wow. Yeah, what I loved about the first music generator is that you could sample, you know, you could eject the disc and then put in a music CD, and then you could get about maybe 8 seconds of sample time that you could mess around with. And so, yeah, you could make amazing stuff with that. But then you couldn't save it onto a memory card because the cards weren't big enough. So I would have to burn down a 2-track onto a CD and then scrap the beat. Like, I couldn't. And people were like, hey, can you change the bass line? And I'm like, nope, I sure can't.
It is what it is.
Yeah, you're kind of stuck with it. Like, you know, I lost my files, you know, I can't get back to it, you know. So that was how I would do. I would make a beat all day. Sometimes I'd have to leave the PlayStation on for a couple days straight, you know, just because I still had ideas and I didn't want to cut it off. But yeah, it was... So from there, I went on to getting some real equipment, and I bought an MPC 1000, which is a smaller version of what used to be, anyway, the industry standard on hip-hop production machines. And then I made a move to Arizona, and so I sold the farm in order to make the move. So I sold everything, and including my B machine. And then I started working on strictly software, and I discovered Reason. And Reason is a great program that I highly recommend. It's kind of expensive, but there's a lot of things you can do with it, and it's definitely something that you can make some really, really great sounding stuff with. And so that, in addition to Logic and Audacity once in a while, is how I make most of my music today.
Cool. So what's what kind of I was listening to a bunch of a bunch of songs last night, and I was trying to pin down kind of like a style or something, or you know, like another rapper that I can recognize, but I don't have the ear for it. So like what kind of inspirations from the hip hop world did you get? Like, I mean, who did you listen to you know, who did you try to ape in the beginning?
Well, I'd say my favorite artists coming up were I loved Eric B and Rakim. I loved the Beastie Boys. I loved LL Cool J. Mm-hmm. And Big Daddy Kane. So what I would try to do is, I think, I don't know if I emulated them per se, but I loved LL Cool J because he was versatile. So I like to try to make sure my music is versatile in some way, so that I have a song for every occasion, or a song you can play for this or play for that, you know. So I try to make sure of that, and that's the LL Cool J influence. Rakim, I think his voice, you know, was always commanding on a track where you know, it was kind of monotone, but it was very serious, and it was... it was all instantly recognizable. So I feel like that was something that I got from him. And And the Beastie Boys and guys like that were just a sense of humor, or just, you know, kind of not taking yourself too seriously, was what I came up with from them. So put it all together and that's random.
Yeah, this I kind of like some of the newer, like, you know, like more underground, like that's, I guess, not so mainstream hip hop now, that where there's kind of like a return to that humor that you're talking about, or yeah, like that playfulness.
A lot of guys aren't afraid to not take themselves too seriously today. You know, I think they're realizing that you don't have to be the coolest or the toughest guy in the room, you know, to make good music. And I think it's becoming a lot more self-aware, and I really like that about where hip hop is right now.
So, who are you listening to? Who are you listening to now?
Man, the guys I'm touring with, or who I'm listening to, Homeboy Sandman, Open Mike Eagle, those two, I feel like are like on the cusp of like being arguably the most exciting guys in hip hop today, or at least in the underground. Because they're just bringing something new and special to the music. So it's self-aware, but it's melodic, and it's interesting. And so I feel like those guys especially are like, they inspire me every single night when I watch those guys, you know, rock it. So I listen to them a lot. I still listen to a lot of old school stuff, you know, to get my, I guess, to gain my roots and my bearings. And so it's still some Eric B. and Rakim and LL Cool J and Beastie Boys and Big Daddy Kane, Slick Rick, Run DMC, stuff like that. But I love MF Doom. He's one of my favorites. There's a new guy named Chance the Rapper who's very very engaging as well. Just super different, but at the same time, just so self-aware. So that's kind of what I like these days. That's what I'm into.
That's cool. Any other genres of music that you that you're interested in?
Oh yeah, I mean, I've recently gotten into chiptune music a whole lot. So yeah, I'm a huge fan of the chip music scene, especially being out in Japan and watching the chip music scene firsthand and playing shows with those guys, and just really learned to appreciate it. As well as, I dig a lot of indie rock. I'm into 30 Projectors a whole lot. I play their music a whole lot. I just got put onto Stereo Lab, so I've been going through their entire catalog. I just love music that's just exploring a lot of different genres and is so skillful at it. So that's really what I'm listening to. I love Deftones.
Man. Yeah, you are my favorite rapper now. I love Deftones. Oh, that was so like mid-90s. I'm a teenager and I hate everything.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. So yeah, that's really what I listen to when I want to get into a rebellious mood, you know.
So what was the reaction overseas? I know you mentioned that you were in Japan, and I think you were just recently in the UK, right?
Yes, we went to the UK and this spring, a few months back. The reception overseas is always surprising to me. It's very very like frantic and energetic, man. And I like to think that I get good reactions everywhere, but overseas it's almost even bigger, you know, than I ever expect. Especially in Japan, those guys are just so excited. And they understand that there's an American on stage, and this doesn't happen every day. And they get so into it. I mean, they were clapping along with every song, like, for the entire, you know, 1 hour set. And I'm like, these guys got to be tired, you know. But they just kept going, and they're all sweaty and just tired afterwards, but they just keep going. And so I feel like the level of excitement about it is at a different level, even in London and some other places. I'm very, very, you know, happy and fortunate to have been able to play in those places just to see the difference in audiences. And, you know, it just goes to show that music is universal. And, you know, and if they can feel it in Montana, they can feel it in China, you know. And, you know, it's just one of those things that you got to, you know, you find your audience. And if you give them what they want, then you can have a really good time. And so, yeah, like I had a blast out there. You know, I really can't wait to go back.
Hey man, I'm originally from the Philippines. If you ever want to go down that way, I know some people.
Oh shoot! Well, yeah, let's talk because I've been talking about that. I have some friends in the Philippines, and I have not been able to travel out there to play.
Oh, so it's big hip hop fandom over there.
Nice,
yeah, right. It's huge.
Cool. Well, let's definitely chat about that.
All right. So there's a couple songs that I was listening to recently that really struck a chord with me. On your Trap EP, Slow and Steady. I really like this one verse that I really identified with. Obviously, I'm not African American, but there's a line there that says, not black enough for the hood, too black for the suburbanites. And I identified with that too because I'm kind of like a two culture kid. I was originally born, over in the Philippines, and we moved over here when I was still pretty young, but kind of. I grew up in Hawaii, so kind of there was like a whole nother culture dynamic and everything. And even with the kids who are Filipino, they share my ancestry. I still felt a little bit outside because they were born in the U.S. and everything like that. And when I go back to the Philippines, I was too American, and when I'd be in Hawaii, I wasn't Filipino enough like how they thought.
Okay.
So was that something that, being into, I guess, more nerdy stuff and all this, was that something that you always experienced or?
Oh, definitely. I would have my small circles of nerdy friends, but yeah, it was definitely hard finding folks to fit in with, it was almost like having an identity crisis, where people would tell me things like, stop acting white, doing things that white people do and. Things like that where it was just a constant thing, almost like you have to be two different people for two different, groups of people. And, I went through that my entire life, from elementary school to college to, beyond, just having trouble fitting in with a group of people. And I felt like music was the outlet, and it was, and even, I feel like even in the music I make, I feel like there is a nerdy edge to it, but there's also, I don't want to say street, but there's definitely, a streetwise aspect to it because because I've been in those situations. So I feel like I am a person that's able to adapt and adjust and to make his way in either or any situation. But it just makes it hard to find your true self. And so for a while, I would make music. I was making music back in the day that I wasn't necessarily proud of. I was. Before I really started to record, but I was, acting tough and doing the tough
stuff. Trying to be too hard.
Yeah, like trying to be too hard, and that was until I realized, like, this is not me, like, at all. Like, why am I doing this, And so it just took me just doing what I do. And now every day, every show I go to, every time I play somewhere, and I specifically remember I was in Milwaukee. And Milwaukee's a town where, at least from people telling me that, there's a lot of tough guys and a lot of stuff going on. And, for the most part, most of the music that comes out of there is very tough. And I did my set and I did my thing with Nintendo and nerdy stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had a guy come up to me, a big guy, was like, twice my size. He was like, hey man, I can't believe you came up there and did that. Like I got the utmost respect for you, man. Like that was me. Like I was that kid, that was sitting home playing video games and, and things like that. But I never really knew how to express that, and so that lets me know that I'm doing the right thing. And I feel like I just want to be that guy. I mean, I don't know if it's a completely, totally self-righteous and ridiculous goal, but if I can just reach those kids that are just like that in every city and every place and let them know that it's okay to be themselves, and that's really, I think, my mission. Is that in itself, not necessarily selling records or anything like that. But if I can just touch people and let them know that it's okay to be who you are, you don't necessarily have to try to be someone else or something else because that stuff can get you into a lot of trouble, So that's really what it comes down to is I didn't want to go to jail, So I knew that my mom wouldn't bail me out, she would kill me, So. Just being a kid who knew better, and I know that there's a lot of kids who know better. So I just want to be that inspiration for them. And so, yeah, that's why I do what I do.
Yeah, and going off of that, the other song on Trap, Black Bags, you know, again, like when I listened to that, the first time I listened to that song, I was really touched emotionally because, you know, like anywhere in the world, there's bad elements wherever you live, and even in Hawaii, there's some pretty bad elements and everything. And I had friends who, you know, I drifted away as we got older because they were into some stuff that I wasn't, you know, I didn't want to be into and stuff, mm-hmm. you know, drugs and stealing and, you know, getting into gangs and stuff like that. And, mm-hmm. like, yeah, I really appreciated, like, what you said in that song and stuff like that. I really felt, like, really connected and stuff. Yeah, no question there. You. I just wanted to put that out there.
Like, I appreciate it, man. That was another, you know, true story from my childhood. And it's funny how we grow up and kind of, you know, we drift away from people, mm-hmm. you know, because they may be into things or just, you know, in general, life just kind of moves you away sometimes. And then to kind of know that you're, I guess you're doing the right thing, but yet still feel so bad about it, you know, and that's kind of that terror is what kind of inspired that song. It's just like, you know, that you're not supposed to be around these people, but you know, you want to be able to help them because you know where they're going, you know? Mm-hmm. And then unfortunately you have to get, you know, the bad news that they're in jail or worse, you know?
Mm-hmm. Or yeah, you just don't, you don't even know what happened to them. So,
don't know. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I think I got time for about one more question.
All right. Kind of ran through my whole thing. I wanted to kind of give you more props on that King's Theme on Trap with the Christian Okoye reference.
Thanks, man.
Dude, there are still people who don't even believe me that there was a guy that his nickname was Nigerian Nightmare. And like when I heard that line, I was just like, man, this guy, like, just everything you put out, like, I totally identify with, and it's so crazy. And it goes back to what you were saying about you know, music being universal and everything like that. And
yeah. Oh yeah, that was, man, he was the man on Tecmo Bowl, man. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, him. And, well, yeah. You know, him and Bo Jackson.
But and Bo Jackson.
It was cheating to be Bo Jackson. Like nobody wanted to play with you with Bo Jackson.
He was banned. He was banned. On our, like, he couldn't use the Raiders at all.
All right, cool, man. Well, yeah. Thanks for taking time out of your day, and I'm gonna, hopefully I'll be at the concerts on Friday for PAX. Hopefully I'll be able to get in.
Awesome. Get there early, man. It's gonna be kind of crazy.
Yeah, Capcom's doing a giveaway too and everything. It's gonna be
right.
Yeah, it's gonna be crazy.
Playing right before the Proto Men, and I know that everyone who wants to see them, who wants to be up front for them, they'll get there early. So they'll get there like way early. Yeah.
All right, cool, man. Yeah, just keep doing what you're doing, and hope to talk to you again.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate this, man. Let me know when this is all up and ready so I can share.
Oh yeah, I'll try to get this up tonight, and I'll text you or tweet you.
Awesome, man. You get great questions, dude.
Okay, thanks, man.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.